Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that's going to review songs for 30 minutes. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And there is absolutely nothing going on in the world of baseball.
Yes, we have inklings of news. Oh, the Astros are pushing for Josh Hader. Doesn't mean they're going to sign him. The Blue Jays signed Yariel Rodriguez. Jim Palmer got scammed. And there's a few other things that are happening that we aren't necessarily going to lead with. But instead, we would like instead to bring back one of our favorite guests to indulge in some classic baseball offseason activity, which is reviewing some baseball music. Matthew Ritchie, our dear friend, is back. Hello, sir. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast.
Hello, hello. Thank you all for having me. This is actually pretty funny timing because I don't know if anybody in the music world knows, but Pitchfork got folded into DQ, and which means they laid off a bunch of my friends, and which is very sad and makes a lot of people mad. So, you know, it's nice to be talking about music in not a way that makes me sad.
So well, we've had you on.
Yeah,
we've had you on in the past to talk about the sport of baseball. But you are also a music aficionado and a music writer. Can you lay out some of your bona fides for people?
Yeah, I do album reviews for Pitchfork from time to time. I reviewed, you know, albums from Lil Uzi Vert to Freddie Gibbs to YG, all that nonsense. I wrote for GQ once. I've written for a lot of places once. And NPR, I did an essay on De La Soul and how they sort of reach streaming again and why they're so popular and why they're important to music. So I think I have an okay grasp on music from time to time. Mm-hmm.
Now, most recently, I believe the most recent review I saw you write was 21 Savage. And
yes.
We are going to transition from 21 Savage to Adam Wainwright, Ronnie Rodriguez, Marcus Stroman, Nick Gordon, and Tyler Beatty. Those are our five artists we will be discussing today. Some of which, if you're listening to this, you know. First of all, you're like, Ronnie Rodriguez. Is that the same Ronnie Rodriguez? Are we talking about him? We are going to review five songs. We have sent these songs to Mr. Ritchie ahead of time so that he could listen. And Jake, I know you were kind of leading the charge here in discovering some of these tunes. So how did you land on these five before we get started?
Anybody can make music, right? In today's day and age, anybody can make music. But should anybody is the question that drives today's exercise. These songs were made by people who reached the top of their field. These are five big leaguers, okay? In Adam Wainwright's case, like a hall of very gooder. Now, do they need to make music publicly? Maybe. We're going to get into that with Mr. Ritchie. Yes, Jordan.
But most importantly, I do not feel remotely qualified to say with a straight face any sort of judgment about any sort of tunes. So Jake and I, of course, we could get on here in the way that they can make music. We can get on here and pretend like we know what good music is and isn't. But since Matthew Ritchie has much more experience actually doing so, we will defer to him. And I am excited to get his professional opinion and just sit back and see what he thinks.
One more thing before we hop in. We are going to have some emails read in the second half of this show. We will say goodbye to Ritchie for that process. But when we post this on the internet, Jordan, people are going to say, wow, there really is nothing going on. And yeah, there is nothing going on. So we have reached that moment, that point where we are having a qualified professional music reviewer talk about Adam Wainwright. Mr. Ritchie, where would you like to begin?
I think I would like to begin at the one that I clicked on first, and that was Nick Gordon's My Life and Nick Gordon's I'm the Man.
Great. Wonderful place to start. So before we get to the song, we should explain who Nick Gordon is and under what moniker this young man has been making music. Okay, so Nick Gordon is still in the Minnesota Twins organization. He was the fifth overall pick, I believe, in the 2014 draft. I want to say, let me confirm that year.
Yep.
2014. Yep. Yes. Whew. And Nick Gordon, of course, the brother of D. Strange Gordon, the son of Tom Gordon. This is a baseball family through and through, and someone who for a long time in his career was kind of like disappointing as far as a fifth overall pick goes. But he did ultimately make it to the big leagues, had a really good season in 2022, really struggled with injuries in 2023 to the point where he was not really in the picture for Minnesota. But along the way, during his come up through the minor leagues, he was producing a good amount of rap music under initially the name G Cinco, and then now more recently it has become Flash G, okay? So,
two good names, by the way.
Two very good names. Now he has not produced, as far as we can tell, he's not produced any new music in a few years. It's been a while.
3 years.
But he did produce not just music, but music videos. This is really where he, you know, kind of separates himself.
We have
some
visually
high quality production music videos that Jake and I have enjoyed for years back for a while. So, but again, like we said, I don't know if what I'm listening to is any good. I'm enjoying it, and you know, Matt Ritchie can't stop me from enjoying it, but I wanted to hear what he had to say about these two songs. Go ahead, Jake.
So let's begin with I'm the Man. Ain't that my squad can't handle. Mr. Ritchie, is this a good song?
I want to preface that I think, how many songs are there? Four? There's six songs. I think five of them are not good songs. and just in terms of just in the grand scheme of it, there's just a collection of not good songs here. But I'm the Man is one of those songs where it's like, if you are randomly at a party that is playing a bunch of melodic rap that sort of can just fade into the background, I'm the Man could sneak in there and you wouldn't even blink an eye. And that is to its credit, because it's not nearly as offensive as like a lot of bad music can be, which is half the battle, honestly. Like if it's not, I have a rule for like certain types of songs where if it's offending me in the first 15 seconds, I'm turning it off.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do any of that for G Cinco, for Flash G. I was like, this is fine. I could play this and not hate myself fully. Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's kind of where we've landed on it. Now, also, I will say that the videos play a big role in the enjoyment for both of these songs.
Good video. So,
obviously, we encourage you to, you know, check out the links to all of these bad songs in the description so you can know what we're talking about. But truly, the videos for these, for a variety of reasons, ranging from like the quote-unquote narrative of what's going on in the video to just like the actual scene of like Nick Gordon hanging out with his high school friends wearing a variety of very, very random baseball jerseys that are mostly associated with the Gordon family is quite enjoyable. So I just want to say that the video adds a lot to that.
And I love that the video is basically double as like his highlight tape. That's very like, oh, if I were to make a music video about me being a baseball player and my journey, of mm-hmm. course I'm putting in multiple home runs and steals and
oh yeah
and clips and like, oh, like look at all these trophies I won.
Yeah.
It is the stunting, it's like the rap stunting version of like just being proud of yourself, which I dig. I'm a fan.
And also, the other thing about, so again, you're referring to the first one, I'm the Man. That's definitely the first one we ever found, I think. Now, My Life, that one, not only does that include highlights, it includes Bud Selig announcing him, which I believe was Bud Selig's final draft. I could be, maybe it was 2015. But
the only appearance Bud Selig has ever made in a rap song?
I would assume so.
I wouldn't... I would
appearance versus reference.
Appearance, like there's probably some Bud Selig recordings somewhere in the middle of like mid 2000s rap.
Maybe.
But at least the time he's appeared in the music video, I will give you that.
But I just love, like, again, the juxtaposition. You talk about the highlights, and that's true. You have, like, some actual sick plays. But, like, especially, I think this is, again, in my life, and I'm the man. But when you see, like, 3 seconds of him, like, lining a ball up the middle in BP in like, a showcase with, like, the beat. Like, that just, again, like, this is why we are talking about this on this podcast. Because it is so hilariously, unintentionally directed at us. And it's great. It's great. And honestly, again, the last thing on G5 that I wanted to kind of ask you about is, like, the production level from the video to, like, everything. Like, he was making these when he was, and clearly, the Gordon family maybe had more resources than the average minor leaguer. But at the same time, like, I feel like they really put a real effort in. You know, this wasn't just like, let me open the MacBook and record something.
And I think what's underrated is that a lot of people in their lives have people who do stuff. Like, you may not know it, but there's maybe 4 to 5 people in your life that make beats, that know how to shoot video, that even know how to edit video. And so, yeah, it was probably like the production value is really good, but it's also that maybe Nick Gordon like lucked into just having some friends who I can make some beats. Or I didn't look at the production credits because I wasn't gonna see who produced and engineered it and who and where the studio was at. I wasn't doing all that. But
so my favorite thing about G5's songs is that there's no curse words at all.
Clean.
Do you notice
that? Like, and you know what? You could play it in a ballpark. That could show up at Target Field.
So my understanding is he has used, I don't think either of these two songs, but I'm almost certain he has used his own music as walk-ups, definitely in the minor leagues, I've heard, but I don't know if he's carried that over to the big leagues. But I think that I totally agree. That part stands out. And how intentional is that? How much of that is, I am going to be a Major League Baseball player and it would be easier for me if I'm making clean music than not, you know, from a PR standpoint. I don't know if that was some guidance he received. But the other thing, again, when we talk about resources and whatnot, is the fact that the I'm the Man video is on the official World Star Hip Hop page.
Correct.
With 27 million subscribers.
But it's also just so easy to get on the World Star Hip Hop. Like,
okay, good. Well, that's why I wanted to ask you. Is that a notable achievement?
I mean, there's a lot of music videos on World Star Hip Hop. Like, yeah. It's basically like the tissues of like the music industry. It's like, oh, like there's another one. Like, oh, just use another one. It's not particularly hard.
Right. Which is fair and reflected in the fact that this video only has 65,000 views in 6 years, despite being on a channel with 27 million subscribers. Yeah. So in that sense, totally fair. I was just curious about that because it stood out to me. But anyway.
So we all know that the gold standard for any baseball-related song is Center Field by John Fogerty. So, Mr. Ritchie, how many Fogertys out of 5... How many Fogertys do you give Nick Gordon?
Oh, I give Nick Gordon 3 Fogertys.
Ooh,
3 Fogertys.
3 Fogertys. That's 3
Fogertys.
And we're again like distinguishing between these two songs. And there's other songs that you know we could have sent you. It's all vaguely similar. So again, G5. We still bump this all the time. So I feel great about you giving it 3 and not 1 or 2.
You know what my biggest fear is? If I made a song, like made a rap song, made it my walk up, and then I hear someone in the crowd be like, "Wow, that's ass! Like, wow, that is a terrible song. Why would he pick this as his walk up song? It's like I'm falling asleep." So I hope no one does that to Nick Gordon. I hope like his walk up song just like flew under the radar when he used it, and like his teammates just knew. Because it's not hateful. It's not totally.
No. And again, like no matter what, like you again making a song that's your own walk up, like
cool.
Regardless, is just a great thing. Like, I, regardless of the quality of the song, is a great thing. Okay, great. So that we've crossed off G5. Where would you like to go next?
Yes, down the list. El Felino, Ronnie Rodriguez, Mi Sueño.
All right. So Ronnie Rodriguez, maybe even less known as a major leaguer, has only played in the major leagues for two seasons, two very memorable seasons with the Detroit Tigers, 2018, 2019. You know, utility infielder, not someone that necessarily stood out for his on-field production, but he did, he has continued on. I don't know how recently he's made music, but his career as a musician, particularly in the Dominican Republic, has truly escalated him to a different level of celebrity in his native land. So, Jake, anything else to add about Ronnie Rod before we talk about his, again, that is, he goes by El Felino?
So I'm not sure the last time that he's made music, but he does have a record label, I believe. And that is an important thing to note. Felino Records Music, the logo of which has baseball bats in it. So I would imagine that he is either an investor, an owner, or in charge of this record label through which he posted, he released his own track, Mi Sueño. My Spanish is decidedly poor. However, I do know that this means my dream.
Attaboy.
Stay hot, Jake. Ronnie Rodriguez, Mi Sueño. Luchando por mi sueño, no me detendría. This video has, I believe, 1.2 million views, which is incredible. Did it deserve 1.1? Did it deserve that type of play, Mr. Richie?
Absolutely. This is the only good song on the list.
Okay.
And I don't think it's particularly close. But I also have Dangerous Affliction for like Dominican rap. It's a problem. But the mixture of guy who's like not great at rapping and a perfect singing voice, it's unbeatable. And Dominican artists, Dominican rap artists have drilled that formula down into a T to where they can be like as like below average as a rapper as they can, but as long as the hook is like a perfect construction of a guy who is just flawless, I don't care. I'm already sold. And that is what happened when I clicked on Mi Sueño. I was first like, oh my gosh, is that Ronnie singing? And I was like, no, it's not Ronnie singing, but it was Jerry El Finito Perfecto, which is Jerry's the perfect voice.
And again, can't refute that, right? And
yeah,
again,
no lies detected.
The video, which is essentially Ronnie and Jerry on a baseball field with fancy cars while a bunch of kids are taking ground balls, is
relatively fancy cars. Relatively fancy. I mean, I believe it's a Camaro and a Land Rover. That's not.
Okay, I know. Sure,
Camaro was my dream car. After I saw Transformers in 2007.
Mi Sueño, as you just said. Now I would
your Sueño car.
to your point about what it sounds like it is. So these kind of songs can sound so heartfelt, right? Even if you don't know Spanish, Jake and I have found ourselves on many a Spotify playlist where it's like some of these, especially as walk-up songs, we became especially connected to Victor Robles' walk-up song at one point for, and it's a little bit of a slightly different category. It's not necessarily hip-hop, but, you know, kind of Latin ballads and whatnot. It's great. But then again, juxtaposed with the music video is awesome because this video seems, it's an incredible combination of both like flexing that I'm a famous big leaguer, you know, and also being like, this is what I've wanted to do. This is my dream. Like, it means a lot to these kids. It means all these different things. Like, it's a very interesting story that it seems like he's trying to tell. And it sounds pretty good.
I think the last clip in the video, I want to talk about this, is a video of him hitting a home run. which I would imagine is his first home run in the big leagues. I will double check it. Player who put up negative 2.2 career wins above replacement, I think this song puts into context what, like, making the big leagues in and of itself is the dream realized. And we see that at the end of the video where he's like, I hit a home run in the major leagues. Who are you?
Yes. And you are correct. That is his first career home run off James Shields on August 23rd, 2018.
Oh my gosh, James Shields was pitching in 2018.
Yeah, that was his last year because, you know, now he's on the Hall of Fame ballot. So
Ronnie Rodriguez put him into retirement.
It's also very funny because he's wearing his what's it called? I'm completely blanking on what they called those. The Players Weekend jersey. So I don't know. Did his jersey say El Felino? I have to go back.
I hope it did. That would be unreal.
Yeah, but anyway. Oh yeah, it totally does. It like absolutely does. So that's amazing too. But anyway, is that a fair, Mr. Ritchie? Any other comments on, again, the quality? Like you said, like, this is the one that you thought was good. So that's pretty important.
Yeah, like if this came on after Table Day like remix on a playlist, as long as it's not offensively bad, it could sneak in. And this one is where I could actually see myself like jamming out to it and really, really, really getting into the rhythm of the song without any question. I wouldn't look up what the song is. Like if it was on the playlist, I wouldn't look at my phone, but I'd be like, oh, this is cool. If I was busy, I wouldn't tear myself away, but it's not like it's not bad at all. Not bad.
It's a little slow.
It is.
Like, you can't really dance to it, but that's okay. It is a heartfelt jam. And how many Fogartys do you give it?
Oh, I give this 4.5 Fogartys.
4.5 Fogartys.
Hey, put Ronnie Rodriguez in, coach. He's ready to play.
It's somewhere in between center field and Orioles magic. That's where okay. That's where Mi Sueño exists on the baseball song pantheon.
Yeah, Ronnie Rod, you know, 584 OPS in Mexico this year, not great. But you know what? Maybe he can continue. If the more he struggles to hit, the more he will hopefully produce more music.
This seems like a man who has successfully diversified his assets moving forward. Speaking of someone who has all of his eggs are in different baskets. Speaking of a man with a lot of eggs, Marcus Stroman is the next artist we are going to review. We don't need to review who Marcus Stroman the player is because he just got paid a lot of money in free agency by the New York Yankees. And if you're listening to this podcast, we had a long conversation about Marcus Stroman the character on Monday. But one of the things that I think often gets overlooked about Marcus Stroman is that he went to Duke. Okay? He went to Duke, and for better or worse, a certain person goes to Duke. And while he was at Duke, he became good friends with a rapper by the name of Mike Studd, who is famous. Like, he is a famous rapper, right? You would describe him as famous.
I don't know
who Mike Studd is personally.
Yeah, Jake, again, we have different definitions of famous. I think we've learned in recent years.
This was my first time seeing who Mike Studd was as the concept of a human being named Mike Studd, like that was totally novel. I was like, oh wow. I was like, Marcus Stroman, and is that a nickname? I was like, is that a legal? Is Mr. Studd? Is that his name? So no.
So just to be clear, Mr. Studd has a video, I believe, with Marcus Stroman in which Stroman is rapping that has 43 million views. Okay. That is a lot.
And one of them was not Matthew Ritchie. Matthew Ritchie was none of those 43 million views.
He was not hip to the stud. Not hip to the stud. So yeah, this video of Marcus Stroman rapping with Mike Studd has 43 million views. Is it good though?
Me made it rain in Vegas with the MVP JD, no whiskey.
Oh, this is where you asked me. I don't think it's particularly good. It feels it's not going to come up. It's not going to come up when we talk about Tyler Beatty. but there is a certain genre of white guys who rap, and for some reason, the Mike Studd song just rubs me a little the wrong way.
Mm.
Just like not in the way that Hoodie Allen would rub me the wrong way, where Hoodie Allen was like, "Oh, I'm a joke. Oh, it's me."
Okay.
Not in the way Lil Dicky rubs me the wrong way, where he's like, "I'm really serious about rap, but also I'm funny, but also it's a joke."
Too many things at once.
Is this in like the G-Eazy category?
It's right there. It's where Mike Studd is like, this is what I was meant to do. this was my calling. I just didn't enjoy a single second of his verse.
That's fine.
Okay,
but
Mike Studd only played college baseball. He did not play professional baseball, and so therefore he is not. He is not the topic of our scorn. Marcus Stroman, who is a top 100 player in the world, and this is when he was like really beginning his career. I believe this song came out in like 2016. So Stroman was like coming on the scene. He's a big deal. And in his verse, he does reference various baseball things. One that stayed out to me was "Made It Rain in Vegas with the MVP, JD, no whiskey." He's referring to Josh Donaldson and distinguishing him from Jack Daniels, which I think is important in this context.
I also love a good reference to the things that you do, aka okay. referencing your own brand in a verse never gets old. Heart doesn't measure height. He name drops his own brand, and I was like, oh, like it's either I don't remember when he like actually started making the stuff, but that's a. It's either foreshadowing or just shouting yourself out, which is classic.
Not just referencing it. Literally, the lyric is trademark HDMH for life. Yeah, that's right. So I copyright. Like, it's the most, and not even meta. Like, he's being like, yes, just so you all know, like, this is my brand.
Like, you can't, so you're like, funny. No, nobody else can use this brand. Just reminding you, this is illegal. This is a legal binding tender. You cannot. Nobody else can use it, which is famously what makes a good rap line. Just when you get into contract law in the middle of your verse, it's I think that's always good.
My favorite part is at the end where he says, "Legendary comeback ACL incision." Yeah. So this is the coolest thing about Marcus Stroman, in my opinion, was the year where he tore his ACL in spring training. And was like, I'm going to pitch again this year. And everyone was like, you're nuts. And then he did. Like, he did do that thing. No matter what you want to say about Marcus Stroman, like, he said he was going to do it, and he did it, and it was awesome. Like, when he showed up at the end of that year and he pitched, that was unbelievable. I like that the final line of this verse is the coolest thing he has ever done in his life.
And that had just happened. Right. So this song, again, if it's coming out in early 2016, like he had done that at the end of 2015. So it was fresh. And to your point, that was still only his second year in the majors. So it was like, oh, like that's what Marcus Stroman is about, which is great. He's making sure he's playing the hits in that sense. He's making sure you know what he is about.
It's also very important. People really deviate on this topic, but it is very good when someone lives their raps. And Marcus Stroman does a really great job of making sure that you know that these things happened to him and there's empirical proof and I'm going to rap about it. And you can't say that I didn't do this. You can't say that I'm false claiming. He's like, nope, this is my life. I'm rapping about it. And which is why his verse was fine. Perfectly fine. I turned the song off after Marcus's verse because
I'm done here.
It was halfway through. And I was like, all right, cool. He's not rapping again. I paid my penance.
Just make sure I'm not missing any other bars for Marcus. Right.
That's a great point. Like, there is no false claiming in his verse at all.
No, there's no cap in his rap. And that's what I really appreciate about Marcus Stroman's appearance on Mike Studd's song these days.
Okay, so let's deliver the Fogertys, and then I want to do Tyler Beattie next and finish with Adam Wainwright, because I think we might as well just you know, finish out the rap conversation here. So how many Fogertys for
how many
just,
yeah. Just Stroman. Fogertys yeah, for let's, Stroman.
Let's not, nobody really cares what anyone feels about Mike Studd. I mean, it's funny, so you can give it negative 10 Fogertys if you want, but we're here to just judge baseball player music. So go ahead.
I prefer Nick Gordon's melodic rap over Marcus Stroman's like Damian Lillard impersonation. So I'm going to give Marcus Stroman two Fogertys.
Got it. Two Fogertys.
Two Fogertys.
Okay. So we're putting G-Cinco in before Marcus Stroman. Hopefully Coach knows that.
He makes the haul.
Okay. So, all right, so now let's move on.
Just to be clear, just quickly, Mr. Studd in his freshman season as a closer at Duke threw 50 innings with a 1.61 ERA. So,
and then I think he blew out.
I'm scrolling the Wikipedia. He looks like he was a dog. He looks like he was just shoving, which can't take that away from him.
Looks like that's what he was born to do.
Yeah, and then he started making music. He has so many albums.
Yeah. He played in the Cape, dude. He played in the Cape.
He played in the Cape, and he has 6 mixtapes and like 7 albums.
Okay, so
he's prolific. What can you
we
say?
We have covered already two first rounders in Nick Gordon and Marcus Stroman from Olympia High School in Florida and Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. We now go to Tyler Beattie, a right-handed pitcher who was also a first-round pick in 2014, same draft as Nick Gordon. Wow, 2014 first round, just churning out absolute musical superstars. Tyler Beattie, who has not pitched in the big leagues since 2022, but I do believe he is currently on the, I'm working at, I don't know if it's Tread or whatever. It's like, I'm throwing hard again. And now he's probably end up back in the big leagues. He was with the Giants for a while, briefly with the Pirates. But most importantly, and the reason why we're talking about him here is because he too, at one point was making rap music under the name Young Beta. Now, I'm not even going to, you know what? Let's just kick it to you, Matt Ritchie. We sent you the song, 508 to the Bill. And the love of the game no longer lasts. And I'm sitting there asking myself these questions that got me laughing because I'm the result. Now, here's an important distinction here, okay? Marcus Stroman doing his music after he's a big leaguer for 2 years. Nick Gordon doing his music after he's a first-round pick, doing all these things. This song came out while Tyler Beattie is like a freshman at Vanderbilt. This is before... Now, he was drafted out of high school, too. So he was fairly well known in the baseball circles. But this is, we're talking about a 19 or 20-year-old kid trying to make rap music. And take it away, Matthew Ritchie.
I think the first thing that hit me when I pressed play was that there was a Mr. Blue Sky sample just in from by Electric Light Orchestra just churning in the background, and it made it hard to focus on anything else, because if there's one thing that all kind of annoys me is like badly used samples. And so it's like, it's just Mr. Blue Sky just circling in the back of my mind while Tyler Beattie's rapping about his journey, and I couldn't even focus on it. It wasn't nauseating. It was just a wee bit irritating. And you know, like when there's like a high pitched noise at like a grocery store or like at a Harris Teeter. When the door opens, there's like a really high pitched noise to keep the birds out of the supermarket. That is what that Mr. Blue Sky sample on 508 to the Bill sounds like to my brain. And it was just so annoying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I couldn't even focus on Tyler Beatty's like rapping, which
sick lyrics,
which honestly might be a little bit of a credit.
Yeah. Maybe that's good. Maybe that's why you get the distracting sample. Now I will say again, like I would guess that this is not a situation where Tyler Beatty 10 years later is like, yo, that was sick. Like by now he's probably like, wow, that was very funny that I did that, that I made these songs. But they're still on the internet.
Which is why I am perfectly okay with Tyler Beatty existing way more than I am with a lot of these other guys.
With Mike Studd producing 8 albums.
Yeah.
So my read on Tyler Beatty, okay? My read on Tyler Beatty is that he was kind of like a musical theater kid. And I just sent you a clip of Tyler Beatty doing jazz hands in a very endearing, albeit dorky, high school kind of musical theater performance. And so I think that his foray into rap came from a history of music. Now, I don't want to sit here on this podcast as a Caucasian individual justifying Tyler Beatty's mediocre rapping. That's not what I'm doing here. I am saying that the through line of Tyler Beatty getting to 508 to the Ville, which is a bad song, is bad understandable. Song. Understandable, right? He didn't wake up one day and was like, I want to make rap music. I think that he, as he aged, was involved in production and theater and performance. I would be interested to hear from Tyler Beatty now, looking back on what I'm sure he admits is not good sounds.
I think also what's important is that Tyler Beatty seems like a chiller. He just seems like a guy that like people like to hang out around. And I think he talked about it because you sent me the Young Beta backstory. And he was like, I had a couple of friends who were making beats and they were like, Tyler, we need someone to hop on these beats and just see if they work. And I think
he's like, Tyler, they don't.
He's like,
no. He's like, if you insist, like, let me spit some fire real quick. All right. Well, hold on. If I must.
I think you Tyler make Beatty's rap career point. Was a victim of circumstance.
But hold on. Just to kind of wrap this here, because I want to get to Wainwright. Back to your... So I totally agree with you, and I think that, like, as I said, he's got way more of an excuse, whatever word you want to say. However, the lyrics in 508 to the Ville, if we're talking about, you know, no cap in his rap, like, there's some aggressive lyrics in here, not too over the top, but it makes him... paints a picture of someone that it feels like he probably isn't.
Which is... Again, central to rap.
True.
It's there's lying about yourself in raps, and there's also being true to yourself. You can be either one. Both work.
Yeah.
Like it feels better coming from different people.
Right. But here's the thing. Yeah. And this is where I'm going to give him credit before we get your Fogarty score here. Like, he dropped this shit during his freshman year at Vanderbilt, right? And presumably he had some teammates that were like, this is the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to us, right? Or to you, whatever,
Jake is looking up the roster to see.
And like, there's all kinds of big leaguers since 2012 to 2014, right? Like, this is in the middle. So whatever. And yet, not only was it not a distraction, shouts out Tim Corbin. We should have asked him about that on our Vandy Bonus interview. Like, he still went on to become a first-round pick. Like, it's not like this, like... he still, you know, became a major league pitcher, which is pretty freaking sweet. And now, again, when he made it, I know he again hasn't had that much success in the big leagues, but it's like, oh, look at Young Beta. He made it from, like, again, it was his own adversity. Obviously, this was, you know, a rich kid in Massachusetts who went to Vanderbilt. But like, by making songs like this, it was like, wow, you overcame your own embarrassing music to become a major league baseball player. Inspiring stuff.
All right. All right. Sueño. Sueño. Tony Kemp was on this team.
Tony Kemp slandered the fuck out of Tyler Beatty for maybe 2 straight weeks. I can only assume that every time Tyler Beatty walked into the locker room, they were playing that song no matter what.
All right.
Mike Yastrzemski was on this team. Yeah, there are people to ask about this.
How many Fogartys, Matthew Ritchie?
Now people trashing my dreams. Is it true what I'm hearing him say? Went from backing my decision to missing a vertebrae.
Oh!
Tyler Beattie gets 1.5 Fogartys.
All right. Ooh, 1.5. Hey, one and a half Fogartys.
That's
one
pretty and a half good. Fogartys. That's pretty good. All right. Congrats to Young Beattie. We now move on to the grand finale. And honestly, maybe the real reason we're here. Adam Wainwright has an album coming out, gentlemen.
It's a shame that Pitchfork won't be around to review it when it comes out in a couple weeks.
Yes. the point is we have at least one of his fire tracks already available. That is a song called Time to Fly. It is available on his on YouTube.
I've been knocked down, but I always got back up.
This is about, again, not hip-hop, so let's just get that out of the way, obviously. But he's just dropping.
We're not the experts. We're not the experts. Is it?
No. But here he is, Wayno, dropping an absolute just, I mean, again, I mean this maybe in a good way for what he's looking for, the most standard country album that's ever been made. And I'm looking forward to it, even as someone who doesn't like country, because we had a discussion on this podcast when he, you know, announced he had an album coming out, basically a bet about how many Major League Baseball players' names would be mentioned on this album. Right? And I don't remember exactly how many we said. I took the under, whatever it was. Jake's like, oh no, he's going to get all kinds of name drops. In this song, we don't have any names. He does use, you know, references being a Cardinal. But sending it to you, Matthew Ritchie, again, I actually have no clue what your opinion of country music is. Obviously, if you play baseball, you are exposed to it in between innings so much. Now, that is like super duper the most mainstream country you're ever going to get. But, you know, maybe some BP playlists get some deeper cuts. I'm not really sure your experience with that. So I don't really know how you feel about country music. I know Jake and I aren't particular fans, but we went in with an open mind with this Adam Wainwright song. What were your takeaways?
So, Just to preface, I enjoy country music.
Okay.
I don't enjoy bad country music, which is like 97% of all modern country music. I like Sturgill Simpson. I like a wee bit of Zach Bryan. I enjoy some Casey Musgraves. I like John Denver. If you're in that realm, if you're old and you're in the 70s and you make country music, I like that as well. So like, I enjoy my fair share. Adam Wainwright, he's in the 97% of country music that I just
can't get there.
It's just not for me. This show I watch, Letterkenny, in their final season, they created like a fake country song in an episode, and it's about smoking cigarettes in the sun. It's about loving your friends. It's about, and it's objectively like, it's like an AI representation of what country music sounds like. If you had AI be like, oh, what is like 99% of like all shitty country music sounds like, and be like, all right, do it, this is Adam Wainwright's Time to Fly.
Bingo. Yep.
It's just nothing. It's like a piece of papyrus. Mm-hmm. Of just country simplicities and that
my friend is why it is going to sell.
Oh my god, it's good. He's going to make so much money. like a scary amount of money for how much work that it's going to make to put this
because
out.
kind of connecting this back to our earlier conversation about G5. Even if we don't like it, like if this is just playing among a string of random country songs, I'm not sure I'm going to notice, you know? And like that is, Jake's like, no, I can tell that's Adam Wainwright. Like I think it would just be like, okay. Now, again, it's a genre that we're not necessarily enjoying at that level, but I do feel like it kind of just is like, yep, that's a country song.
Now, we talked about your lyrics being your life. And in this song, oh boy, this is his life. Here's the first verse. I've been knocked down, but I always got back up. The fire keeps on burning hot deep down in my gut. You might just have IBS. I still want to. I tried to always be your rock. I tried to always be your rock. Yeah, I dug deep, never quit, but you can't outrun the clock.
Dark.
No, Adam Wainwright.
This song's literally like, I tried to do this as long as I could, and now I'm old. I have to move on. It's funny because the time to fly is it's time to make country music.
It's time to fly into the arms of Father Time and take the sweet release of my career ending. That is what time to fly is the crux of.
I enjoyed Adam Wainwright's chase for 200 wins. However, I would argue that his time to fly was at the end of 2022 when he had a 3.71 ERA in 191 innings. And not after 2023 when he had a 7.40 in 101 innings for the Cardinals.
Hey,
but we're not here to talk about Adam Wainwright's promo to the end. We're here to talk about it's time to fly. It's time to head back home. I might have to go, but I won't ever be gone. It's a terrifying image to think that Adam Wainwright's never leaving you.
He's always with me.
I mean, it's
omnipresent. Like It Follows, but with Adam Wainwright. It's just everywhere.
But again, like the St. Louis fans are one of a kind, and you'll always be in this heart of mine. It's time to fly. It's time to fly. Yeah, okay, we get it, right? It's very on. There's no like subtext. There's no like, oh, you know what's funny, Jake? These lyrics are on Genius, right? Genius is a good site where you go and you find lyrics, and then a great thing about Genius is it's like, oh, like that was an interesting lyric. Like, what does that mean? Not required for this Adam Wainwright song. There's not a single line where you're like, what is he referring to here? He is giving it to you straight. So maybe for other parts of the album, there's going to be a little bit more complicated, deeper references. I'm not counting on it. Either way, I think this is a great entry point into the Adam Wainwright discography. And I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes from here, even if it's definitely not my kind of music.
I will gain more respect for Adam Wainwright if there's one song on the album about getting fucked up with your boys. If there's a song,
I feel like that's a second right? album kind of thing.
No, you have to get. He can't just do like 10 songs of, man, I love my career and I love going out there every day. Like you gotta have that one song for the boy. You gotta have that.
If there's a song about, it's just him tying one off with, you know, Matt Holliday and Yachty Molina, you know, about the time that like Shelley Duncan got too drunk and vomited on like a road trip.
I think it's in play. If that does appear on the first album, I imagine it will be presented as more classy than you are describing. More vague, I think.
You think it shows up, it's like his white album? He sort of like gets like really into
it depends if it's going to be part of this or not. Like maybe he'll take a turn where there's a little bit more raunchy stuff. I doubt it. Doubt it?
Let me ask a question and then we'll have you Fogarty it up. Adam Wainwright performed a farewell concert the last home weekend of the season in front of what I believe it was like 40,000 people. Does he in his musical life play a bigger venue than that?
No, I think he will be resigned, but he will be haunting House of Blueses across the country. And Brooklyn Bowls.
He's not going to Brooklyn. Matt.
Hold on. I disagree.
There's a Brooklyn Bowl in Tennessee, but it's a bowling alley, it's a brand. But like that genre of like, it's a space that's a bar that's not really a venue. He's not going to Red Rocks Amphitheater. You know, like he's not selling.
He's not doing the Fillmore.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. Like, Busch Stadium holds 45,000. I don't know how many people were there that day, But like him play, the only chance he's playing something bigger than that is another baseball stadium, which I think is more likely than any actual musical venue.
I'm going to take the alternate approach, which is he's going to open for a larger country music star than him.
Yes.
Whether it be a Morgan Wallen or a Kenny Chesney or a Jason Aldean or something.
Agreed.
He's going to get embedded in this world. Yes. And he's going to play a song in St. Louis at a bigger venue. Although the problem is there's not a bigger venue.
There isn't a bigger venue. That's my point. No. Like that.
Yeah, the Busch Stadium is the pinnacle of St. Louis.
Yeah. But even, again, it's just baseball. It's a large stadium. So unless he's going to play a football stadium somewhere else, I just don't. It's going to be tough for him to top that. So anyway, Matthew Ritchie, round it out. How many Fogertys for Adam Wainwright before we say goodbye to you?
Well, Quantas Fogertys? Quantas Fogertys?
I think did you Google how many and then put it in the translate?
I know three things in Spanish, please. Okay.
I give Adam Wainwright two Fogertys. I don't think it's that much better than the Tyler Beattie song, but I do think it's in that tier. It doesn't reach the Marcus Stroman, Nick Gordon tier for sure. Mm.
So I think you gave Stroman also a 2 or 2.5. So, but you're saying it's below Stroman, above Young Beta. Got it. I think I agree with that. I completely 1000% agree with your Fogerty rankings for all of these songs. I feel validated that I was not missing something when I was listening to this. Like, I feel like I learned from you, and I also feel like, okay, like I we're on the same page.
It's impossible to miss anything with these songs.
Okay.
what you're seeing is what you're getting.
Yeah.
The only thing that might go by is like an inability to understand every word that was rapped by Ronnie.
Oh,
Rodriguez,
by El Felino.
But otherwise, like, and that's what I appreciate about these songs. It's what you saw is what you got.
Totally.
And that's all you can ask for.
Spot on. Wow.
Nick Gordon, Adam Wainwright crossover when?
Never.
Probably never. I don't know if I'm actually curious if they ever face each other. I'm going to look that up as soon as we're done with you. Matthew Ritchie, thank you, sir. Follow Matt. Where can people follow you on wherever and see your latest work? You can go read his writing about 21 Savage, you know, like actual music.
Yeah, the actual music.
relatively, certainly.
You could follow me on Twitter or Instagram, MKRWRT. That's all it is. That's all I do. I'm barely on either of those anymore, but like, it's like,
and by the way, Matthew does also write about baseball, for MLB.
I do. That's right. That's partly why. Yeah. I also write about baseball, for MLB.com, from time to time,
which is cool, which we also like, but I'm very glad you write about music because that made this podcast an absolute delight. Matthew Ritchie, thank you. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to get to some of your emails, some of the other news. Hey, long pod today. I had a great time. Thank you, Matthew Ritchie. We'll be right back here on Baseball Barbecues.
And welcome back to a long Friday version of Baseball Barbacast. Before we hop into the email bag, Jordan, any news around the league worth talking about?
I mean, Yariel Rodriguez signed with the Blue Jays. That is one I'm excited about just because he is somewhat of a mystery box as someone we saw in the WBC, looked really good. That was like the only sample he had as a starter where he looked like a competent starter. For the most part, he's been a really good reliever in Japan recently. And it's interesting because the Blue Jays, unlike the Giants, where it's like you should not be relying on Jordan Hicks to be a starter, although it really seems like they're going to do that, and I'm excited to see them try, the Blue Jays have a ton of starting pitching. So if Yariel Rodriguez has to go to the bullpen, there is no problem with that, and it is nice to see them be aggressive in getting him there. At the same time, like, they have a lot more that they need to fix on offense. So I would expect them to continue to be aggressive, someone like Soler, someone like Reese, I don't know. So good for the Blue Jays. I'm excited to watch that dude.
Maybe something will happen over the weekend.
Yeah. Josh Hader to the Astros is interesting, but let's wait for that to actually happen, and we'll cover that next week if it indeed does.
Great.
Instead, let's do emails, because we haven't done these in a while. I know we're going long here, but we've been getting so many good emails, and I hope that we can get to more of them as stuff continues to not happen. So we're going to do a handful today. And again, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. And where would you like to begin?
We got a lot of good email responses to the conversation about whether I'm in the 99th percentile of podcast fastball velocity. I want to thank everybody who really crunched the numbers. Quite a few people really got into the nitty gritty of this.
Oh yeah, no, and I really appreciated the degree to which people were doing some math, trying to figure it out. And it seems like most people were kind of like, yeah, like you probably are in the 99th percentile of podcast velocity.
And that was the consensus. However, the most interesting email I think we got on the topic was from Justin, who said, Jake is obviously correct in claiming to be in the 99th percentile of fastball velocity among podcasters. Not even a question. Trying to count who would be faster. Doolittle, CC, Mookie Betts, Colin McHugh. Love Colin, but no new pods in like a year. So I feel, you know, is he an active podcaster? Just saying. Well, shouts out to Colin.
True. Well, I was going to say, it's also relevant to what he's asking about.
Correct. It occurred to me that we might have an actual debate about one. Can Jake throw harder than known podcaster Jerry DePoto? The general manager of the Pobo of the Seattle Mariners, Jerry DePoto, has a podcast. He has not done it in a while as fan sentiment has tumbled. He has abandoned.
I can't decide if that is a reason for him to come back or most people don't want to hear him talk anymore. Last podcast was September 19th. A lot has happened in a very negative sense for the Seattle Mariners and Jerry DePoto since then. They've sort of come back around and had like a sort of okay offseason, sort of, but not really. So I don't know when he's going to podcast again. But if we are still considering him a podcaster, do we think... I don't know. I actually... I'm not certain. I don't remember how injured Jerry DePoto finished his career. That's something to consider for a lot of former pitchers and whatnot. What do you think?
Jerry DePoto pitched 8 seasons in the major leagues, which gives him quite a leg up mm-hmm. over me, who pitched 0 seasons in the major leagues. However, my advantage over Jerry DePoto is that I am 28, and Jerry DePoto turns 56 in May. I am 100% certain that I can throw a fastball harder than Jerry DePoto right now. Jerry is in good shape for a 55-year-old. I'm not trying to be ageist here. I am sure that I can throw a fastball harder than Jerry DePoto. Jerry, I know you're not listening, but...
Again, though,
challenge.
It does...
Spring training, on the radar gun, me versus you, taking you down.
We love asking people when's the last time they threw a baseball max effort, and he's someone I would like to know that. So... you know who we should ask this is his son, Jonah.
Yes.
We will message him and get back to you. All right. Let's move on. Who is our next email from?
Our next email is from Sam. Sam says, hey, Jake and Jordan, I'm sitting at work procrastinating and wondering if it could be fun for the league to start promoting more thematic rivalries between teams on top of the natural regional and divisional rivalries. Like the White Sox versus the Red Sox, Battle of the Sox, Red Sox versus Reds, Red, Jays, O's, Cards, Bird Battles, Mariners, Pirates, Seafaring Rivals, Phillies, Angels, teams named after their city. I think Manfred will be owing me a lot of money when he gets his hands on this awesome marketing plan. What do you think? Love the podcast. Thanks for all you do, Sam. Jordan, thoughts?
Yeah, Sam's all over it. I can't believe
none of these have
emerged as more legitimate rivalries, particularly the Seafair. Mariners Pirates is a pretty delightful, because Mariners Pirates is, I know interleague is more normal now. That is like top tier weird interleague. And I saw the Mariners play in Pittsburgh a few years ago, and it was very strange. But at no point did it cross my mind that I was watching a rivalry game.
Sam, there is one that you missed. And it is maybe the greatest rivalry of them all if you live in the United States of America. and that is the Yankees versus the Royals. I'm not sure if you know a lot about the American Revolution, okay, the origin of our nation, but Yankees versus Royals was a very lengthy confrontation.
That's in fact,
that stretched all the way to the War of 1812, if you really want to dig into it.
Okay? I was going to say, though.
And it is it is apt that the Yankees have dominated the Royals over their tenures as Major League Baseball teams. So what I propose is that when the Yankees play the Royals, the Yankees dress up in Revolutionary era, like Patriot, Militia, Battle of Lexington and Concord bullshit. And the Royals have to like wear red coats. And we really play that up.
I love this. I was about to say like, oh, well, you would, you know, you'd play it on July 4th, but that doesn't seem fair. You'd want it to be more of a neutral date to at least make it feel like it was more of a competition, even though it isn't, right? It's like we're spotting the Royals. Like, are we giving the Yankees, you know, a 10-run lead to start? I don't know, but it's so true that the Yankees and Royals in the history of baseball, it's not been particularly close.
So that's a great point. And I just listened to a full podcast about the American Revolution, actually. And what the American revolutionaries were great at was losing well. George Washington was the master of the you know,
the great loss,
calculated retreat. He was they were piling up great losses. And so I believe like the Battle of Brooklyn Heights is thought of as like a battle that the Brits won, but the Yankees got away. And it was in New York. That was August 27th, 1776. So every year, August 27th, Yankees, Royals, they play in Brooklyn, in Prospect Park. No downsides.
Love that.
In Brooklyn. One more idea. Red Sox versus White Sox. Whoever loses the season series, no socks for you the following year when you play the series. You have to play sockless.
I love that idea. I don't know. I would say the degree to which how dangerous that is probably somewhat weather dependent. but either way, I love that idea. Take their socks away. Our next email comes from Chris, not producer Chris, although he's here too. Hi, Chris. Chris says, hi, guys. I've been wondering for years why right-handed pitchers never attempt to pick off of third base. It seems with a little practice of the timing, pitchers could catch someone napping in a big spot. I don't remember the last time I even saw an attempt. What am I missing? Greeting from Sweden. All right. We got Swedish. I don't know if Chris is actually Swedish, but he is in Sweden. Hello, Chris. Thank you. Jake, you were a right-handed pitcher. Do you ever pick anyone off at third?
No, but we tried. This was a play that we practiced quite a bit on my college team. In fact, when my college team was in the College World Series, D3 College World Series in 2021, they picked someone off with this play in a World Series game. And all the alumni that were watching, we lost our minds because we spent so much time that we thought was wasted, working on this play. The reason that you don't see it at the big league level, the right-handed pickoff at third base, is that the timing that's required is really perfect. It needs to be perfect. And it requires the third baseman to be positioned pretty close to the bat. Which they so rarely are. And it's just not worth it. Like, you're gaining more run prevention by playing the third baseman further away from the bat.
And the risk of bungling that is the run scores, whereas the risk of throwing it past the first baseman is much less so.
I don't want to sound like a crotchety old baseball analyst, but I do think that nowadays pitchers are very bad at throwing to bases.
Yep.
I think that is a skill that has gotten worse, and I just would not trust most pitchers to pull this off without throwing the ball into the seats.
Semi-related, though, is like I, especially with, even with the shift being banned, you still have third baseman way off. And I am always surprised. And I've asked coaches about this, why, like the kinds of leads, whether it involves stealing home or not, like it feels like guys could get even farther off third than they do sometimes because they're not going to do, like sometimes you see guys just run at them, not even throw, right? That's another option. Obviously, you're also in some ways just trying to draw a balk. So anyway,
yeah.
All right. We have one more email and that is from Nick.
Nick says, I'll do it. Shut up, Jordan. Hey, fellas.
Sorry.
Great to have you both back from your overseas excursions. Love the podcast with Benji Niacin. First, here's a take on the MLB logo tattoo that Jordan spotted on the beach. For those of you who don't remember, Jordan was in the U.S. Virgin Islands and saw a dude with a back tattoo of the MLB logo. We discussed it at length. As you probably know, the MLB logo was designed by Jerry Dior, who passed in 2015. Maybe that beach dude was Jerry's son. Honestly, wow. Great theory.
Sure.
Great theory. I would say that if it was Jerry's son, the tattoo would have been done better.
Yeah. And yeah, but I still love the theory. So continue.
Yeah. Also, I've never learned how Morgan's sword is, how old Morgan's sword is or what he looks like. But based upon job description and name alone, I wouldn't be surprised he's a college baseball coach looking dude with that tattoo. Wrong.
Couldn't be Morgan's more sword. Incorrect. Well, first of all, who is Morgan's sword? Because I think some people still don't even know who that is.
Morgan Sword works for the league, and I believe his title is Executive Vice President of Baseball Operations at MLB.
Yeah, he's like top five important person in Major League Baseball in terms of working for the league. Super involved, of course, in a lot of the CBA stuff and anything involving, you know, on-field stuff. Related to whether it's CBA negotiations or just rule changes, all that stuff. Like rule changes, especially, Morgan Sword's been like the face of it. However, I would not describe him as looking like an old college baseball coach.
Two thoughts on Morgan Sword's look. One, he was on 40 under 40 last year, so he's under 40. The second is he kind of looks like comedian Chris Gethard, if you know who Chris Gethard is.
I do. I do. That's a good comp. I will say that, like, if he was wearing the right combination of pullover and whatever, I could see him looking like kind of a new age college pitching coach. Like a, yeah. But he looks nothing like the guy that had the tattoo. So that's one thing. I think that's why I'm thrown off here.
I don't think Morgan Sword has dipped in a decade. We'll leave it at that. Second, a question for you both. The Mariners' infuriating offseason has me pondering the value of clubhouse leadership. On one hand, it's a sports platitude. On the other, I'm heard you two talk about certain players who offer 70-grade vibes. The offseason, the Mariners have dumped Suarez, Marco, and Robbie Ray, all respected veterans, and brought back Haniger. How important is leadership or veteran personalities on a team, and do front offices consider those dynamics when making moves? The good front offices certainly do. To me, it is this simple. If you enjoy going to work and you like the people you work with, you're going to be better at your job. They'll stop. I think over the course of baseball history, too much emphasis has been placed on the vibes of players because for a long time, there was no way to analyze player performance beyond that. And so it was like, well, this guy's a good hang. Like, yeah. I almost think we've swung back in the other direction now, where the environment within a clubhouse and how people interact with one another is an important part of the process. I mean, look at the 2023 San Diego Padres. Vibes were bad and they underperformed. Now, I know that's just one example, but I do think it's a really good example of how a lack of leadership in a clubhouse can spiral into a bad season.
Yeah. And I think that it is a huge deal and a huge part of why they wanted to bring back Haniger to begin with. I think if Mitch Haniger wasn't who he was as a teammate, as a leader, as someone who had already been there, the rest of the profile would not necessarily be one you'd be excited, you know, to bring back into your team. But not just the guys you mentioned, but like Tom Murphy was another huge part of that clubhouse. He's gone too. So I do think that it made a big difference there. Also why guys like Mitch Garver, who are beloved, make them even more appealing as free agent additions. So I think it definitely makes a difference.
However, let's be clear about one thing. This is J.P. Crawford's team.
Yes, it is. But it is now Mitch Haniger's team again because he was the guy beforehand and now he will be again. But we love J.P. Crawford. Thank you, Nick. Thank you to everyone else who emailed us. Again, keep those coming. BaseballBarbacast@gmail.com. Hopefully you enjoyed this lengthy Friday edition of the show. Thank you to Matthew Ritchie for reviewing some music with us. Thank you to producer Chris for producing this episode. Hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. And we'll be back on Monday with another episode of Baseball Barbacast. Goodbye.
SiriusXM Podcasts.